welcome to the political cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host for tonight, James Edwards.
It is so great to be home. Saturday, September 24th, welcome to the Political Cesspool Radio Program. I'm your host, James Edwards, and I'm coming to you for the first time in a month from our flagship radio station, AM 1380, WLRM Radio in downtown Memphis, Tennessee. I never thought I'd be so happy to see Beale Street, but here we are. And I am back from my many travels, a 17-day multi-stop speaking tour wrapped up for me last week. And as I said, this is the first time since the last Saturday night in August that I've been in the broadcast booth here at WLRM Radio. Of course, Keith Alexander and Bill Rowland dutifully held down the fort for me as I called in each week from my various locations. And I tell you, I got to tell you, you know, we're having this economic downturn, you know. I trust Keith and Bill like brothers. In fact, they are brothers to me. But I was a little concerned, you know. It's never been a month. I've never been away from the station for a month, so I was a little concerned that, you know, maybe somebody would get an itching to pawn one of my Frankie Valli autographs on eBay or something, you know, make a quick buck. But luckily, all 17 of them are still on the walls here, Keith. So y'all did a good job. But I got to ask you, did y'all throw a party in here? There's clothes all. When I left, this place was spick and span, neat and orderly. Now I see, you know, there's candy wrappers, there's cups, there's books everywhere, there's clothes everywhere. I mean, how do you explain that? I mean, this. I wish people could get a load of this place. There's scrap paper with notes. You know, I run a little bit tighter ship than that, guys. I mean, did y'all go back to your frat days or what? What was going on here in the 3 weeks I've been out of town?
Well, James, you get what you pay for, old buddy. And as you know, you pay none of us anything. So I guess beggars can't be choosers, as they say.
Which was why I was concerned about my extensive, you know, Frankie Valli autograph collecting. I thought y'all were going to collect, you know, off of those years of services and go to the pawn shop, but they're all still here.
I'm afraid you've overestimated the value of your Frankie Valli. They're worth a lot more to you than they are to everybody else. Believe me, there's no. You are a true collector who collects but never sells. But let me tell you, it's great to have you back from your peregrinations all over the place. I guess those bill collectors got to be too much for you here in Memphis, right?
Yeah, that's right. I had to hit the road and get away from the bill collectors and make a few stops along the way, which, of course, as people know, included the National Press Club in Washington, D.C., and then the Practical Politics and Leadership Seminar in Knoxville last week, along with some private stops along the way to private clubs, Republican clubs, and things like that. But it is great to be home. Of course, I called in each week while I was on the road, but it was great for y'all to have held down the fort so well. In fact, I think the shows that we have produced for the listening audience in September are among the very best that we've given you the entire year. And it only promises to get better as we head into the fall, Keith. A lot of exciting things happening here in the political cesspool. A lot of big guests coming up. I was sharing one of those guests with Keith just before the show. We're not going to let the cat out of the bag tonight, but I will tell you, you will certainly want to make plans to tune into our show each and every Saturday night for the rest of the year and into the new year, for that matter. But we do have some great guests coming up. A lot of big things, and it's, again, good to be home. It's good to be home and enjoying this great weather. The summer has mercifully come to an end, and now we're enjoying some nice, cool, clean, crisp weather here in the Memphis area, and it just makes it all the more enjoyable to be here tonight.
And, of course, cool, crisp fall weather brings a young man's fancy in mind to football, particularly in the South, college football. And on that note, let's talk a little bit about Ole Miss football and what a, you know, terrible downfall it's had since the little experiment began with racially integrating the Southeastern Conference. You know, a lot of people don't understand this or, you know, don't have the historical perspective to realize this, but Ole Miss used to be the toast of Southern football. I mean, it eclipsed Alabama football back in the day in the 50s and 60s. There was a point right before they racially integrated the Southeastern Conference that Ole Miss had more bowl appearances than any other college in America. Texas, Ohio State, Michigan, UCLA, USC, you name it. Syracuse, any of them. And then they integrated the league, and quite frankly, SEC football is, it's supposedly at the top of the pack, but for Ole Miss, they have now replaced Vanderbilt as the doorman of the league. They lost to an inept Georgia team today, 27-13. They lost to perennial doormat Vanderbilt, 30-7 last week, and lost to a bunch of white boys from the old Western Athletic Conference, BYU, in the first game, 14-13. The only team they've beaten, James, is Southern Illinois University. What's up with that?
Well, they would have had another win if they had played the University of Memphis, but I don't guess they dipped into Division II schools yet.
Nope. I tell you, our lovely assistant just gave us some pizza, and I had one bite, and then James showed
up. Hey, Keith's got to – listen, we got to get this stuff on video. In fact, that's one thing we're working on behind the scenes. You know, you would have really gotten a kick out of that if you could have watched this rather than just hearing it this evening. Yes, we had you know, it's a big occasion with me being back in town, apparently. So we're getting food tonight. And the assistant here at the station brought us in some pizza bites. And no sooner did Keith take stuff as a mouthful than that I hand the microphone back to him. And that was...
And the reason was James wanted to hand off the microphone so he could stuff two of these slices of pizza in his mouth at the same time.
I didn't want Keith to get all the food, you know. I wanted to make sure I got five slices to his one. A good 5-1 ratio here. I tell you, we're having a good time tonight. It's fun. It's a lot more laid back than the last three shows have been for me, with me being, you know, calling in from a crowded room or a hotel room. And, you know, we've had a lot of guests on the show over the course of the last 2 weeks in particularly. Well, I know even the week before that, Bill Rowland interviewed Brother Nathaniel Kapner, of course, 2 weeks ago when I was in Washington, Jared Taylor, Richard Spencer. Who else was on that show? Sam Dixon. Sam Dixon was actually on 2 weeks in a row. And then last week we had three of the speakers from the conference there. So it's been a very busy broadcast during the month of the shows during the month of September. Tonight it's going to be a little more laid back. We're going to catch up on a lot of news items. In fact, a lot of the news items that have been piling up on our excellent website, thepoliticalcesspool.org, we haven't even had time to get to them over the course of the last couple of weeks, because we've been bringing you these live reports from the field, and we've been bringing you all of these guests and these speakers at these various conferences. So tonight we're going to be playing a lot of catch-up. We're going to cover a lot of news in very short order. And, of course, Keith comes armed this evening with his intellectual ammunition. He has got a few stories to bring to you as the remaining segments of the first hour roll on, including an excellent article that we posted this week following up on the excellent article with which Keith played a big role in, our review of the movie The Help, Driving Miss Ditzy, we called it. Well, believe it or not, there is a lawsuit that has been filed. I believe it's either been dismissed or settled. I don't know exactly the status of it. We'll find out during the break, but pretty interesting stuff. You've got this anti-white author, Catherine Stockett, who writes this book, The Help, anti-white book, which gets turned into an anti-white movie, and she's sued by a black woman who claims, you'll never guess it, yes, indeed, she was a racist. Aren't they all? That's what my book says. We're going to take a break. Keith's going to tell you all about it when we come back. You're not going to want to miss this story. Unbelievable. Stay tuned.
Jump in the political cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
All right. You know what, folks? I can't say it enough. I forgot how good this, I wouldn't call it a rocking chair, but it's a nice leather chair that reclines, gives you a little bit of a rock. And my wife bought it for me, of course, and it's my throne here at AM 1380 Radio, WLRM, and it's good to be back in this chair. Folks aren't going to believe it. When I was in Washington, we were staying at this little boutique hotel, and there was no chairs in the room. I had to do the entire program standing up by the side of my bed. 3 hours. I guess I could have sat down, but anybody that knows me, I'm kind of like a caged lion. When I'm thinking, when I'm into it, I can't sit down. So I was just kind of pacing by the bed for 3 hours. But it's really nice to be back home with you, Keith, and here reclining, getting ready to listen to you give an excellent report on what's the latest with the help. Remind them what it is and what we've got on the website for them this week.
Well, as we've all heard countless times, the opera ain't over till the fat lady sings, James. And this certainly applies to America's latest soap opera, The Help, which is nothing more than a heaping helping of warmed-over civil rights movement leftovers served up by the usual suspects in Hollywood. In case you've been in a coma for the last several months, The Help is a fictional anti-white story about black maids in the South during the civil rights movement before the blessed triumph of liberalism, when the walls came tumbling down. Unfortunately, other things came tumbling down too, like public educational standards and public civility. And on the other hand, to be fair, there are several things that rose too, like venereal disease rates, crime rates, and illegitimacy rates as a result of the civil rights movement. But nonetheless, you know, that's the holy of holies for the liberals that are populating both the liberal and conservative movement in America today, so there's always an audience for this type of stuff. And, of course, Catherine Stockett is the author. She's a white Jackson, Mississippi socialite who decided to write a book from the supposed perspective of The Help, the black women that served as maids to her social set back in the day. And she used as the primary spokesperson for this book her former maid from her childhood, Abilene, sweet Abilene Cooper herself, who is a composite of all things wise and wonderful, just like most black people are in real life, James. But, you know, and of course, what would you expect? Quite unexpectedly, someone took offense to all these over-the-top portrayals and has sued poor little Skeeter, I mean Stockett. You know, Skeeter is the protagonist, white heroine in the novel and in the movie. And, you know, this is really a low blow.
By their standards.
Yeah, right. Of course, this is a low blow because we all know what a selfless and high-minded person Catherine Stockett is. She was just trying to strike a blow for equality and justice in this selfless endeavor. Now, just who would complain about being collateral damage in such a worthy project? One of those snarky junior leaguers with preppy names like Hilly that are the primary villains or villainesses in this piece, undoubtedly. Someone who harbors some unreconstructed lack of repentance for her horrid racist behavior in the past so fittingly portrayed in the movie? No, the potential litigant, or the actual litigant now, is none other than sweet Abilene herself. She accuses little Skeeter, I mean Catherine Stockett, of the foulest sin of all, racism. She needs to read your book, right, James?
That's it.
Well, Abilene charges, "I think she's just a racist." This is Catherine Stockett, in other words. She claims that she respects black people, but she ran all over me. Somebody find the smelling salts because Skeeter done fainted. How can you imagine such a paragon of liberalism as Catherine Stockett being accused of racism? Well, just like James says, racism is synonymous with white person nowadays, so consequently, why is Catherine surprised? While The Help is reviving Catherine, you know, with the smelling salts and all, it's apparent to this observer that Abilene's charge of being run all over comes down to nothing more than cold hard cash. How dare the honkified Stockett write about her without her getting the lion's share of the money from the enterprise? Of course, you know, that's, you know, this unfortunately seems to be the way that some people in the black community think. You know, the fact that they are totally mystified with the idea of an artistic creation and that the artist that writes the novel ought to get something or ought to be the primary beneficiary from writing the story. Instead, if the story is about you, you ought to get all the money. You know, artistry be damned. That's some foreign concept, apparently. Well, like a pirate crew, the real fighting usually starts when they start divvying up the swag. Catherine apparently hasn't given the upper exploitative ways of dealing with The Help after all, at least not in the eyes of sweet Abilene. Look for the other maids to dive onto the scrum in short order seeking reparations. This is what invariably happens, and it is so deliciously ironic. You know, rather than the white people who are the real victims of this story, the junior leaguers and others who are portrayed in such an unflattering light, it all comes down to the Benjamins, as they say, and the black help primarily is the adversary of this white liberal author who thought she was currying favor with blacks. This tells you, there's a lesson to be learned here, James. Don't ever go down that path of trying to pacify liberals or the black community, because it's a dead-end street. You'll never do it. You'll wind up bloody and bruised as a result, and you don't gain a thing for yourself. It's like a circle being closed here. You know, you had the Jewish book publisher who basically encouraged Catherine Stockett to write this book, and now probably the Jewish legal profession is going to wind up taking most of her money away from her when all the dust settles.
Just an incredible story from start to finish. Folks, if you haven't read it for yourself, I encourage you to go to our website tonight, thepoliticalcesspool.org. Find the blog entry appropriately titled, Author of the Help, Accused of Racism and Sued. So once again, just to recap, you have this Catherine Stockett who wrote an anti-white fictional book. It was a work of fiction, a novel. Was it ever, Keith said. And in which she, you know, vilifies the South, shows contemptuous contempt for her parents and everything that they stood for, everything that her ancestors fought for. She shows, sheer hatred for that and for those traditions. And, it, of course, because it vilifies the South, it gets turned into a big movie. And then after the movie comes out, what happens to this person who has done everything she can to hang her kinsman out to dry? Well, she gets accused of racism and then subsequently sued by one of the people that she tried to make into a saint, to lionize.
Yeah, this is how it happens, is invariably what happens. And what I think, I understand that the lawsuit was dismissed for missing the statute of limitations. Here's what I think happened, James. Things like books just aren't on the radar of the Help, black maids like Abilene Cooper. There's an old joke, how do you hide money from a maid? The answer is put it in a book, because that's going to be the last place they look. But then on the other hand, when it became a movie and they could see that money was being generated by this project, suddenly, their interest was piqued, and at that point, they probably got in touch with an attorney and started trying to figure out a way to cash in on their newfound fame through this book. And, of course, that's all they're concerned about. You know, all of this so-called goodwill from lionizing them, worshiping at the shrine of the civil rights movement and political correctness, none of that is worth two hoots in hell. Basically, what this is about is money. And, of course, these people are always brisk for business with every way of making money except honest labor. So, consequently, when they think that money is being made and that their name is somehow involved in it, they're ready to jump in with both feet.
We got to take a break, folks. It's our featured article this week at the website. Check it out for yourself, thepoliticalcesspool.org. When we come back, more ground to cover. Stay tuned.
Get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool. Call us toll free at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, everybody, welcome back. During the last commercial break, Keith and I, we're gentlemen and we're friends. So there's one last slice of pizza here. And I was like, Keith, by all means, you take it, my friend, Oh, no, James, I can't do that. It's the last piece. You have it. And then, to both of our surprise, there seems to have been a bite taken out of it. Neither of us can figure out who did it. So I don't know what's going to happen with that last piece of pizza there, Keith.
Maybe it was Willard, the station rat. That's what.
Yeah, Willard up there in the green room. I don't know. That's a little bit. I think that one might be sitting there with that's good. That we're going to tie that one. But anyway, it's all too appropriate that the Political Cesspool radio program, a nationally syndicated show, is based right here in Memphis. And I guess it had to have been based here because this is where you know, we were born. This is where the action is, but more than that, it's where I was born. And since, you know, I'm the founding host, I guess it's the cesspool is going to be founded wherever I stand. And so I was born here, but it's perfect. It's perfect that I was born here to host this show, because Memphis represents everything the political cesspool is fighting against. Keith, elaborate on that and then get into, you know, Keith likes to bring local Memphis stories to the show because it really is a perfect representation of what all major cities with a diverse population can, will, and are enduring.
Or what they have to look forward to. Basically, Memphis is where the action is when it comes to race relations in America. You know, we're going to, you know, you know, just like the black mayor of Cambridge, of Camden, New Jersey, said in 1969, he was elected, I don't know where America is going, but Camden's going to get there first. Same thing can be said for Memphis. This is where the rubber meets the road in race relations in America. If you want the laboratory, if you want to see where things are trending and where things are heading, study Memphis. And that's what we do in our Behind the Enemy Lines segment, which is basically what we call the first hour at the beginning of the political cesspool's run. And I still like to hark back to it every once in a while. You know, if you were in Kalispell, Montana, for example, like Chuck Baldwin, you're not going to have the experiences we have here in Memphis. We're back here behind enemy lines. We're your man in Havana or men in Havana trying to report back to you to let you know how bad things can get. And in the Memphis Commercial Appeal for Friday, September the 23rd, the head article on the first page is Census Calls City, that's Memphis, poorest in nation. Metro area poverty tied to education, expert says. That's the headline and subheadline of one article. And then, lo and behold, the next article, with no sense of irony at this particular juxtaposition, Memphis City School Board says Cash, that's Kreiner Cash, the black head of the Memphis City School Board, merits bonus. So, in other words, education is so bad in Memphis that it is the key to why Memphis is now the poorest city in the nation, based on government statistics. But our educational superintendent is doing such a marvelous job that he merits a bonus, James.
I got to say one thing. I was actually, I'm not a masochist like Keith in so much as I cannot bring myself to watch local news on the local affiliate stations, the TV news. I can't bring myself to read the local newspaper, the Commercial Appeal. It just puts me in a bad mood. It makes me upset. And I, you know, why would I want to feel that way if I don't have to? So I don't do it, but Keith does it. But for whatever reason, I was flipping through the channels the other night and I stopped on a local news show and I happened to see this very story that Keith is bringing to your attention right now. If you don't know what's going on in the Memphis public school system, they had to surrender their charter. They were so inept at running schools that all of the schools in the city of Memphis are closing down and they're being absorbed by the county. They are bankrupt. They cannot run the schools within a budget, and all of their schools, most all of them, are failing. And yet, here's this guy, Kreiner Cash, that Keith is telling you about. At a recent meeting of the Memphis School Board, Shelby County School Board, he received an A-plus rating from himself for cranking out all of these failing schools, for surrendering his charter, and he gets voted, despite already earning a six-figure salary to lead this into the ground. He gets a proposed $41,000 bonus, yet the system itself is so bankrupt that they're closing shop.
Yeah. The city of Memphis schools, which are three times larger than the Shelby County schools, which is the remainder of the county in which Memphis is located, those schools are so bad they're in the bottom two of all school systems in the state of Tennessee. There's only one that compares with it. They won't tell us which one is at the bottom, but my money is on Memphis. Meanwhile, the Shelby County schools, which is a fully integrated school system, 35% black, not 87% black like the Memphis City school system, they are within the top five school systems in the state of Tennessee. Of course, the Memphis school system is run by, for, and in the interests of black people, while the Shelby County school system is run by a predominantly white board and a white superintendent. They are now going to have to absorb all the Memphis City schools, and when all the dust settles, I'll bet you a dollar to a donut hole that good old Kreiner Cash, the Memphis City School Board superintendent, the guy that presided over Memphis's race to the bottom to become one of the two lowest-ranked school systems in the state of Tennessee, is going to be the new superintendent of this newly formed Shelby County School Board that will include the Memphis City schools as well as the old Shelby County schools. Now, how does Kreiner Cash, the appropriately named Kreiner Cash, figure that he's entitled to a bonus when he has caused or presided over the decline of this school system to such an extent that it is one of the worst two in the state of Tennessee? Well, without any apologies whatsoever, he says, because I bring in the bucks. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, those off-the-chart liberals from the Pacific Northwest, gave $90 million to the Memphis school system because they are so intent upon disproving nature and proving that the law of gravity doesn't work, that black isn't white and white isn't black. They want to improve the test scores in Memphis, and they're willing to put $90 million into the effort to do it. Kreiner Cash is taking credit for bringing that in. In other words, it's like we used to have this old TV show in Memphis called Dialing for Dollars. They would run an old movie and in the on TV in the afternoon, and you would dial in. They would put some question about the stars in the movie or the director of the movie or something like that on the screen, and people would dial in, and if you dialed in and got the first right answer, then you won some money. Well, apparently to Kreiner Cash, being a school superintendent is just about dialing for dollars. You call up government sources, private charities, and you gather in money. So apparently it has nothing to do with educating children. It has everything to do with raising funds, James. And unfortunately, this is just dovetails with what I've said is the hidden agenda behind the city school system in a place like Memphis, a majority black city like Memphis, or any other place where there is black leadership. Basically, the public school system isn't there for the primary benefit of the students, the children, the black children who go to those schools. It's about providing those gold-plated government jobs for black adults. You know, when I was a kid in school in the Memphis City schools, what we had to do was we had to get by with one teacher in front of a classroom of 30 to 40 kids, but we had excellent schools and excellent test results. Now you get one teacher and at least two what I call lion tamers. These are teaching assistants who don't need to have any type of educational achievement whatsoever. They don't have to be college graduates. They don't even have to be junior college graduates. This is how they hire all the black cronies, give them these jobs, and they get government pensions, they get Cadillac health insurance, and they get civil service protection at the expense of the taxpayers generally. And what was happening, the reason why Memphis City Schools surrendered their charter really had nothing to do with anything, again, but the Benjamins. They were afraid that the white people out in the county were going to be able to take their money away and have their own school system financed with their own money. And, of course, they can't hire all the black cronies that they want to in the city school system if the white people withdraw their money. So, consequently, they decided we can pull this end run on the whole system by surrendering our charter. Then, under Tennessee law, the default provider of education is the county government. The county government would have to provide education for the black children of Memphis. And as a result, because we're three times more numerous than the people in the county outside of Memphis, guess who's going to be running the new school system by application of Voting Rights Act of 65 principles? You guessed it, the old city of Memphis people.
It's hard to stop a train when it's got a full head of steam, but we got to take a commercial break. I'm putting Keith over into the, I'm pulling him into the rail yard, and we're going to come back with more right after this. Stay tuned, everybody.
Welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's dime, toll free at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, friends. James Edwards, Keith Alexander here with me and you tonight on the Political Cesspool Radio program. Great to be home here relaxing in my, I tell you, the last 3 weeks, not only have I been doing the show from the road, I've been doing it with a collared shirt and tie. And Keith, if you know me, and you do, you know how much I hate to do that. I like dressing up when the occasion calls for it, and I think I clean up quite nicely. But if I had to pick, you know, let me just put it this way. I'm not coming in tonight in a suit and tie. I really don't want Keith to elaborate as to what I'm wearing, but let's just say it's jogging pants and an old T-shirt, and I am feeling good about it. Don't even have shoes on right now. I'm making fists, like Bruce Willis said in Die Hard, making fists with my toes on the carpet here in the studio, and I'll, mosey on back home. That very relaxed atmosphere tonight, and I tell you, the show couldn't be better, and never can, when Keith Alexander is a part of it, and he was really going to town on the Memphis City School Board, the latest manifestation of corruption here in our town, and he's still got a few more pearls of wisdom to share with you before the end of this hour. Keith, back to you.
Yep, just wanted to let you know that one of the manifestations of this school board drama in Memphis is that they have now handpicked a blue ribbon committee of whites and blacks to, as they call it, transition the old Memphis City schools and the old Shelby County schools into this new, bigger, better, supposedly, Shelby County school system. And as usual, the black members are all ultra-partisan black rights specialists, you know, people that are going to go to the mat, to the wall for the interests of black people. On the other hand, the white people are the biggest liberal sellouts and the biggest kiss-ups to the liberal viewpoint and the pro-black viewpoint that you can imagine. That's why they're chosen. In fact, it's become a science in a place like Memphis now. I don't know if it's like that in your hometown yet, but wait for the demographics of America to change, and you're going to see the whole format, the system worked out in places like Memphis, transposed into your community. What they do in Memphis, they have groups, what they call NGOs, non-governmental organizations like Leadership Memphis. They have this leadership thing all over the country. They've got Leadership DeSoto. They've got Leadership Germantown. They've got Leadership Cucamonga. They've got Leadership Detroit. They got them everywhere in the world, and at least in America, excuse me. And the whole purpose of this is not to find leaders, but to be able to separate the sheep from the goats, to find the likely young up-and-comers in the emerging generation, and like Santa Claus with his list, determine who's naughty and nice. Being naughty means you're a conservative. Being nice means you're a liberal. If they divine through this process that they go through, where you have to be in all these bull sessions for 6 months or more, talking about all these liberal hot-button issues, if they divine that you're a conservative, then they know who not to ask to sit on these transition teams and blue ribbon committees and yada yada yada, and who not to promote, who not to put on the board of directors of this charity or that organization. On the other hand, if you are a liberal, then you've got the good housekeeping stamp of approval, and you will be picked for all these things, because quite frankly, they won't tolerate white people that have the best interests of the white community at heart having any input whatsoever in the making of public policy, James. That's exactly why they're doing this. So consequently, you can kiss the Memphis and Shelby County schools goodbye. Quality public education is going to be the first casualty of this new regime in Memphis. And as a result, as they always do, white people will vote with their feet. They'll do what Sam Dixon says and move to the next exit down the expressway and try to set up there, even in these days where you can't sell your house. What's going to happen is a lot of these former single-family owned homes in Memphis and Shelby County are now going to become rental properties. And, of course, rental properties always decline at a much accelerated rate to owned homes. So, consequently, again, they're going to kill the golden goose. We've said that basically there's this parasite-host relationship between the black and the white communities. Don't kill the dog or all the fleas will die. Well, the fleas have now hopped onto the nearest dog to Memphis now that they have turned Memphis into the poorest city in the nation. And they're now going after the suburbs of Memphis within Shelby County, the nearest suburbs. They're going to infest and kill that dog, and then they'll be looking for another dog to hop on later. And as I've said before, when that happens, when they have to go beyond the county lines, watch all the elites start banging the drums. They'll suddenly discover the wonderful virtues of metro government. Metro government is a code word for an ability to consolidate and tax beyond your county lines, like they do in Nashville, Tennessee, like they do in a lot of other places. See, they want to avoid the fate of Detroit and St. Louis, where the city is surrounded by white suburbs that aren't particularly interested in supporting the black underclass in St. Louis and Detroit, for example. They want to always be able to lay their hands on the white folks' money. In fact, that's the constant and perennial dilemma of black politicians. How do you get the white people's money without getting voted out by the white people's votes? And when they outnumber you, it's Katie bar the door, James.
Why are you giving the microphone to me? You know, I've got 2 hours left to spin my wheels tonight. The audience is going to be deprived of your talents in about 5 more minutes after this segment's over. Yeah, he wants to know if there's more food coming in. Maybe he'll stay. But we've got 5 minutes left, and I don't want to have them miss a moment of being able to hear what you have to say. Anything else on your agenda tonight, Keith?
Let's talk about Ole Miss football. We started to talk about that before. Yeah, let's just talk about it. Here's what goes on. Ole Miss football used to be the toast of Southern football, particularly in the 50s and 60s, under the tutelage of legendary football coach John Howard Vaught. Ole Miss racked up more bowl appearances by 1971 than any other college football program in America. More than Texas, more than UCLA, more than the University of Southern California, more than Michigan, more than Ohio State, more than Syracuse, more than any Eastern power, Notre Dame, whoever. You know, you name them, Ole Miss was number one. They put people into the pros like Charlie Connerly, the legendary quarterback of the New York Giants who became the prototype for the Marlboro Man, the Marlboro Cigarette Company's public spokesman and public face. That was Charlie Connerly, who was a decorated Marine hero in World War II and served as the quarterback on Vaught's first football teams and took them to their first bowls. This was Ole Miss. Ole Miss with playing Dixie with its band dressed up in Confederate uniforms, with Colonel Rebel riding on a white stallion, a student from Kappa Sig fraternity, dressed in a Confederate cavalryman's uniform, brandishing a saber and riding his steed across the football field with the football team following and the cheerleaders and everybody else in tow. That's what Ole Miss football used to be. But of course, all of that came to a screeching halt when liberalism triumphed in the South, and as a collateral damage consequence of that victory, the Southeastern Conference, which had fought mightily, was the last major conference in America to integrate racially. They racially integrated in the early 70s. And when that happened, Ole Miss, first of all, had Johnny Vaught retire, just like Adolph Rupp at Kentucky, who retired at the same time. They both saw the handwriting on the wall. They knew that the game that they loved was going to change, and it wasn't going to be a change for the better. So they bailed out, cashiered their pensions, and lived happily ever after from their various schools, and never was a discouraging word said about the real reason why they retired. Then Ole Miss started to suffer. They had a 12-year bowl drought until 1983. In 1983, somebody wised up and hired a former Vaught player, Billy Brewer, who had been there in the glory days and knew how to win. And as a result, he turned Ole Miss into a winner, albeit not a big winner. But in 1983, he was named SEC Coach of the Year because he won, had a winning record in the SEC with what they called Ohio Valley Conference caliber players. The cupboard was that bare. But superior coaching won out, and Ole Miss started going to bowls, albeit minor bowls like the Independence Bowl. Then they finally got up to the Gator Bowl and things like that. But then we got the typical liberal crusading chancellor at Ole Miss, and we seem to get them time after time. This one was some Church of Christ nerd from Oklahoma named Gerald Turner, who decided that he was going to plume himself with glory for being the guy that dragged Ole Miss kicking and screaming into the latter part of the 20th century. And he basically came here and was a NCAA plant and basically set up Billy Brewer and got him fired.
That's all the time we got. Well, that's all the Keith Alexander we have time for tonight, ladies and gentlemen. He'll be back with us next week, and I'll be back with you after a quick burst of news with the second and third hours of tonight's show. Stay tuned, everybody.
And screaming, some thought he had religion, others thought he had a demon, and Harv thought he had a weed eater loose in his Fruit of the Looms. He fell to his knees to plead and beg, and the squirrel ran out of his britches leg unobserved to the other side of the room, all the way down to the Amen.